In February 1979, as millions of Iranians lined Tehran's streets, a bearded cleric in his mid-70s descended from an Air France 747 after 15 years in exile. The moment Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini's feet touched Iranian soil, history pivoted. Within days, 2,500 years of monarchy would collapse, replaced by an Islamic republic that continues to challenge Western assumptions about politics, religion, and modernity. This revolution wasn't just another regime change. It represented the first modern theocracy, a profound rejection of Western political models that had dominated global discourse for centuries. Revolutionary Iran remains one of the most misunderstood nations despite its outsized impact on global politics. While Western media often portrays it as a monolithic fundamentalist state, Iran contains multitudes, a sophisticated civilization with continental diversity in ethnicity, language, and culture. Michael Axworthy's comprehensive history reveals an Iran that defies simple categorization. Neither fully democratic nor completely totalitarian, simultaneously revolutionary and traditional, culturally vibrant yet politically repressive. The book has achieved cult status among diplomats, intelligence analysts, and Middle East specialists for its nuanced portrayal of Iran's complex society. Former CIA Director John Brennan called it required reading for anyone seeking to understand contemporary Iran, while Iranian-American novelist Porashista Khakpour praised it as the rare Western account that captures Iran's soul rather than just its politics. The Iranian Revolution of 1979 stands alongside the French and Russian revolutions as one of history's three great modern revolutions. Yet while the French and Russian revolutions are often understood through Marxist frameworks, the Iranian Revolution defies easy categorization despite extensive commentary. What made this revolution particularly remarkable was its religious character. In an era when most intellectuals assumed religion was retreating from public life, Iran's revolution placed Shia Islam at its center. This wasn't merely a conservative backlash, but a sophisticated theological-political project that reimagined Islamic governance for the modern world. The revolution began amid economic uncertainty following the oil boom's decline. When the Shah's government relaxed some repressive measures in 1977, it inadvertently opened space for dissent. A government attack on exiled Ayatollah Khomeini in January 1978 triggered demonstrations in Qom, where religious students were killed by police. This sparked a cycle of demonstrations and violent crackdowns, each followed by 40-day mourning periods that fueled further protests. The 40-day cycles created a rhythm to the revolution, explains historian Abbas Amanat. Each funeral became a political demonstration, and each demonstration created new martyrs. It was a self-perpetuating cycle the regime couldn't break. By September 1978, after Black Friday, when martial law was declared and hundreds of demonstrators were killed in Tehran's Jalla Square, the Shah's credibility collapsed. Oil workers joined strikes that paralyzed the economy. The military, despite its impressive American equipment, began disintegrating as conscripts deserted in growing numbers. By January 1979, the Shah fled and Khomeini returned triumphantly on February 1. What made this revolution different from others was its unique fusion of traditional Shia religious narratives with modern revolutionary politics. The story of Imam Hussein's martyrdom at Karbala in 680 CE, where the Prophet Muhammad's grandson was killed by a corrupt ruler, provided a powerful template that resonated with ordinary Iranians. When protesters faced the Shah's troops, they weren't just opposing a dictator, they were reenacting a sacred drama central to Shia identity. Contrary to Western perceptions, Ayatollah Khomeini wasn't a medieval throwback, but a sophisticated religious innovator who fundamentally reimagined Shia political thought. Born in 1902 to a clerical family, he studied under leading scholars in Qom and developed unconventional interests in mysticism and philosophy alongside traditional jurisprudence. What distinguished Khomeini was his radical reinterpretation of velayat-e-faqih, guardianship of the jurist. Traditional Shiism held that in the absence of the hidden imam, religious scholars should focus on spiritual guidance while maintaining distance from political power. Khomeini inverted this doctrine, arguing that Islamic jurists had not just the right, but the obligation to rule directly. Khomeini's genius was in presenting a revolutionary doctrine in traditional language, explains religious scholar Hamid Dabashi. He made a radical innovation appear as a return to authenticity. During his exile in Iraq and later France, Khomeini refined his theory while building a network of supporters within Iran. His messages, smuggled into the country on cassette tapes and distributed through mosque networks, reached millions. While secular opponents of the Shah focused on political grievances, Khomeini offered a comprehensive alternative vision that addressed spiritual and cultural alienation. What many missed at the time was Khomeini's strategic ambiguity. To religious conservatives, he promised Islamic governance. To liberals and nationalists, he spoke of freedom from dictatorship. To the poor, he promised social justice. This coalition building allowed him to unite disparate opposition groups against the Shah while concealing his ultimate intention to establish clerical rule. When Khomeini returned to Iran in February 1979, he moved cautiously but deliberately. Rather than immediately seizing power, he appointed the moderate Mehdi Bazargan as prime minister while establishing parallel revolutionary institutions that gradually consolidated clerical control. The Islamic Republican Party, revolutionary committees, and revolutionary courts systematically marginalized secular and liberal forces. The early months of the Islamic Republic revealed the tensions between its democratic and theocratic elements. The provisional government led by Bazargan attempted to restore normalcy and prepare a new constitution, while revolutionary forces led by Khomeini's clerical allies pushed for more radical change. This tension came to a head during the constitutional drafting process. The initial draft, prepared by secular lawyers, envisioned a parliamentary democracy with limited religious oversight. However, the assembly of experts, dominated by clerics, fundamentally transformed the document by inserting the principle of velayat-e-faqih, giving the supreme leader extraordinary powers above elected institutions. When moderate clerics like Ayatollah Shariat Madari objected that we seem to be moving from one dictatorship to another, they were marginalized. The seizure of the American embassy in November 1979 by radical students further undermined moderates, as Bazargan resigned in protest while Khomeini endorsed the hostage-taking as a second revolution. The 444-day hostage crisis proved transformative for both Iran and America. For Iranians, it reinforced revolutionary fervor and anti-American sentiment while providing cover for internal purges. For Americans, the daily humiliation of seeing blindfolded diplomats paraded on television created lasting hostility toward Iran that continues to shape policy decades later. The crisis also facilitated the Islamic Republic's consolidation of power. With public attention focused on the confrontation with America, the regime systematically eliminated opposition groups. Liberals and nationalists were pushed aside, while leftist organizations like the Tudeh Party and the Fedayeen were initially tolerated before being crushed once they'd served their purpose. By 1981, the regime had established the core institutions that continue to define the Islamic Republic: a powerful supreme leader, a subordinate president and parliament, and unelected bodies like the Guardian Council that ensure clerical oversight of the political system. In September 1980, Iraq's Saddam Hussein launched what he expected would be a quick, victorious war against a weakened, post-revolutionary Iran. Instead, the conflict became the longest conventional war of the 20th century, lasting 8 devastating years and costing hundreds of thousands of lives. The war's impact on Iran's revolutionary development cannot be overstated. As historian Ervand Abrahamian notes, if the revolution made the war possible, the war made the Islamic Republic inevitable. The conflict allowed the regime to mobilize society around nationalist and religious sentiments while justifying harsh repression of dissent as necessary for national survival. Iraq's initial invasion captured significant Iranian territory, including the vital port city of Horamshahr. However, by 1982, Iran had recaptured most lost territory and faced a crucial decision: accept peace or continue the war into Iraq. Despite some advisors urging restraint, Khomeini chose to continue fighting, declaring the goal was not just to defeat Saddam, but to liberate Jerusalem through Baghdad. This decision proved catastrophic. Iranian offensives into Iraq met fierce resistance, with human wave attacks sending thousands of young Basij volunteers, some as young as 13, against Iraqi fortifications. A Basij survivor recalled, "We would move forward in lines, chanting Allahu Akbar as mines exploded around us. Many of my friends never returned." The war internationalized as Gulf states funded Iraq, while the Soviet Union and Western countries provided weapons and intelligence. Iraq's use of chemical weapons, including the infamous attack on Halabja that killed thousands of Kurdish civilians, received little international condemnation. By 1988, with the economy collapsing and military prospects dim, Khomeini finally accepted a UN-brokered ceasefire, comparing it to drinking poison. The war had transformed Iran, militarizing society while cementing the Revolutionary Guard's power. It also created a generation of veterans whose sacrifice became central to the regime's legitimacy. As the war ended, Khomeini made his most consequential theological-political innovation. In January 1988, he declared that the Islamic government had absolute vice-regency, with authority that superseded even core religious obligations like prayer. This doctrine of absolute guardianship, velayate mutlak, dramatically expanded the supreme leader's powers beyond his original theory. This theological revolution coincided with a brutal purge. In summer 1988, following an unsuccessful incursion by the opposition Mujahideen-e-Khalq, Khomeini ordered the execution of thousands of political prisoners in what Amnesty International called one of the most heinous chapters in post-revolutionary Iranian history. Special commissions conducted brief interrogations, with those still expressing opposition immediately executed. When his designated successor, Ayatollah Rantazeri, protested these killings in letters that called them crimes that will condemn us in history, Khomeini removed him from succession. This pivotal moment revealed the regime's prioritization of power over principle and eliminated the one senior figure who might have reformed the system from within. Khomeini's death in June 1989 triggered a hasty succession process that elevated Ali Khamenei from president to supreme leader despite his limited religious credentials. The constitution was amended to remove the requirement that the leader be a marja, senior religious authority, institutionalizing the supremacy of politics over traditional religious hierarchy. Former President Akbar Hashimi Rafsanjani emerged as the system's power broker, engineering Khamenei's elevation while securing the presidency for himself. This second republic represented not a moderation of revolutionary principles, but their transformation into a more bureaucraticized system where revolutionary fervor gave way to pragmatic power management. The post-Khomeini era saw Iran attempting to rebuild after the devastating war while navigating a changed international landscape following the Soviet collapse. Rafsanjani's presidency, 1989 to 1997, focused on economic reconstruction and limited diplomatic outreach, though his attempts at economic liberalization faced resistance from both revolutionary ideologues and traditional merchants. The election of reformist Mohammad Khatami in 1997 represented a dramatic shift. A mid-ranking cleric with philosophical interests, Khatami won in a landslide by promising greater cultural freedom, civil society development, and improved international relations. His Dialogue of Civilizations initiative sought to present Iran as a responsible international actor rather than a revolutionary pariah. Domestically, Khatami's presidency saw a flowering of newspapers, journals, and cultural production. Iranian cinema achieved international recognition through directors like Abbas Kiarostami and Mohsen Makhmobaf, whose subtle explorations of social issues offered glimpses of Iran's complex reality beyond political slogans. However, the reform movement faced systematic obstruction from conservative institutions controlled by the supreme leader. When reformist publications investigated the intelligence ministry's involvement in the murders of dissidents, the chain murder scandal, hardliners responded by closing newspapers and imprisoning journalists. The pattern repeated throughout Khatami's presidency: electoral victories for reformists followed by institutional blockage of meaningful change. When students protested the closure of a reformist newspaper in 1999, security forces and vigilante groups attacked university dormitories. Khatami's failure to defend the students damaged his credibility with his base. By his second term, Khatami's reform project had stalled. The Guardian Council vetoed progressive legislation, while the judiciary imprisoned key reformist strategists. International openings were similarly thwarted, most notably when the Bush administration rejected Iran's comprehensive 2003 proposal for resolving bilateral issues despite its approval by Supreme Leader Khamenei. The 2005 election of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, a little-known former mayor of Tehran with Revolutionary Guard connections, marked a sharp turn toward populist nationalism and international confrontation. Presenting himself as a humble man of the people against corrupt elites, Ahmadinejad promised to bring the oil money to people's tables while reviving revolutionary principles. His presidency coincided with rising oil prices that initially funded populist programs, but his economic management proved disastrous. Inflation soared while sanctions intensified in response to Iran's expanding nuclear program and Ahmadinejad's inflammatory rhetoric, particularly regarding Israel and the Holocaust. The disputed 2009 presidential election triggered the largest protest since the revolution. When authorities declared Ahmadinejad the winner with 63%, despite widespread evidence of fraud, millions took to the streets in what became known as the Green Movement. The regime responded with brutal repression, killing dozens and arresting thousands. The Green Movement represented a profound challenge to the Islamic Republic's legitimacy. Protesters appropriated revolutionary symbols and slogans, chanting, "Where is my vote?" and "Death to the dictator." Though ultimately suppressed, the movement revealed deep divisions within Iranian society and the regime itself. Ahmadinejad's second term saw increasing isolation internationally and growing tensions with the supreme leader domestically. By 2013, with sanctions crippling the economy and the currency collapsing, Iranians elected the moderate cleric Hassan Rouhani on a platform of diplomatic engagement and economic stabilization. After four decades, the Islamic Republic presents a study in contradictions. It combines elements of democracy, regular elections with genuine competition within approved boundaries, with authoritarian control, unelected bodies that can veto legislation and disqualify candidates. It has created a unique hybrid system that defies simple categorization as either totalitarian or democratic. The regime has shown remarkable resilience despite predictions of its imminent collapse. This endurance stems partly from its adaptability, shifting between ideological rigidity and pragmatic flexibility as circumstances require, and partly from the deep institutionalization of its power structures, particularly the Revolutionary Guard's extensive economic and security networks. Iran's society has transformed dramatically since 1979, despite and sometimes because of the revolution. Literacy rates have soared, with women now constituting the majority of university students. Urbanization, declining birth rates, and expanding access to information have created a population far different from the one that supported Khomeini's revolution. The fundamental tension between Iran's Republican and Islamic elements remains unresolved. Each election cycle reveals the gap between popular aspirations for greater freedom and the regime's determination to maintain ideological control. Yet, unlike truly totalitarian systems, Iran permits enough space for debate and limited reform to prevent complete alienation. Iran's international position similarly reflects competing impulses. Its revolutionary rhetoric and support for groups like Hezbollah contrast with pragmatic diplomatic engagement when interests align. The 2015 nuclear agreement represented a potential turning point toward integration with the global economy, though subsequent developments have reinforced Iran's isolation. As Michael Axworthy concludes, Iran remains a real country, not a cartoon villain. Understanding its complex reality requires moving beyond simplistic narratives to recognize the genuine achievements, profound contradictions, and ongoing struggles that define this revolutionary republic nearly half a century after its dramatic birth. At the heart of Iran's revolutionary identity lies the Karbala paradigm, the story of Imam Hussein's martyrdom that provides both spiritual meaning and political framework. This narrative of righteous resistance against corrupt power resonates deeply in Iranian culture, informing everything from revolutionary mobilization to contemporary politics. Shia religious practices in Iran go beyond formal theology to include powerful popular rituals. During Ashura commemorations, participants engage in collective mourning through processions, passion plays, taziyeh, and sometimes self-flagellation. These rituals reinforce communal identity while providing emotional catharsis through shared grief. The revolution transformed traditional Shiism by politicizing these religious narratives. Where clerics had historically maintained distance from direct political power, Khomeini's doctrine placed them at the center of governance. This represented not a return to tradition, but a radical innovation that many senior clerics initially opposed. The relationship between religion and politics has evolved over the Islamic Republic's history. The early revolutionary period saw genuine religious fervor driving political mobilization. Over time, this dynamic has partially reversed, with political imperatives increasingly shaping religious interpretation to justify regime policies. This politicization has paradoxically weakened religious authority. Many Iranians, particularly younger generations, have grown disillusioned with official Islam, seeking either more personal spiritual paths or abandoning religious practice entirely. As sociologist Asif Bayat notes, the Islamic Republic has produced perhaps the most secular generation in Iranian history. Nevertheless, religious narratives remain powerful resources for both regime legitimation and opposition politics. Reformists like former President Khatami drew on Islamic concepts of justice and consultation to argue for democratic reforms, while Green Movement protesters in 2009 strategically adopted religious symbolism to challenge the regime on its own terms. The tension between Iran's religious identity and its engagement with modernity remains unresolved. Unlike purely secular states or traditional theocracies, the Islamic Republic attempts to synthesize democratic procedures with religious oversight, a hybrid system that continues to evolve through ongoing contestation between competing visions of Iran's future. Iran's nuclear program has become the defining issue in its international relations, though the controversy reflects deeper questions about Iran's role in the regional and global order. Beginning under the Shah with American support in the 1950s, the program expanded significantly after the revolution, despite Western opposition. For the Iranian regime, nuclear development represents both practical security interests and symbolic national pride. Having experienced chemical weapons attacks during the Iran-Iraq War with little international response, Iranian leaders view self-reliance in defense as essential. The nuclear program also demonstrates technological advancement that resonates with a population proud of their ancient civilization's scientific achievements. International concerns about Iran's nuclear ambitions reflect both proliferation fears and geopolitical calculations. While Iran consistently maintains its program is peaceful, Western and Israeli intelligence agencies have presented evidence of weapons-related research. The fundamental issue isn't enrichment capability itself, but trust regarding Iranian intentions. Sanctions imposed in response to the nuclear program have severely damaged Iran's economy while strengthening the Revolutionary Guard's economic position through control of smuggling networks. This perverse outcome has hurt ordinary Iranians while enriching regime insiders, undermining the stated goal of pressuring decision-makers. The 2015 Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, represented a diplomatic breakthrough, trading verifiable limitations on Iran's nuclear program for sanctions relief. However, the Trump administration's withdrawal from the agreement in 2018 reinforced hardliners' argument that the West cannot be trusted, leading Iran to gradually exceed the deal's limitations. Beyond the nuclear issue, Iran's regional policies reflect a complex mix of revolutionary ideology and pragmatic state interests. Its support for groups like Hezbollah serves both ideological goals and practical security concerns by creating deterrents against potential attackers. Similarly, its involvement in Iraq, Syria, and Yemen combines genuine religious and cultural affinities with strategic calculation. The fundamental question remains whether Iran will eventually normalize its international relations or maintain its revolutionary stance. The answer likely depends on internal political developments as much as external pressures, with ongoing contestation between pragmatic and ideological factions shaping Iran's approach to the world. 40 years after Khomeini's triumphant return, the Islamic Republic faces profound challenges to its revolutionary model. Economic pressures, demographic changes, and global connectivity have transformed the society the regime governs, creating expectations it struggles to meet. Young Iranians, born long after the revolution and comprising the majority of the population, have different priorities than their parents' generation. They seek economic opportunity, social freedom, and global connection rather than revolutionary purity. Their disillusionment manifests in widespread apathy toward official ideology, though not necessarily in organized political opposition. The regime's legitimacy increasingly rests on nationalism rather than religious fervor. When faced with external threats, even Iranians critical of the government often rally around national pride and independence. This reflects a deeper historical pattern where Iranians across the political spectrum value sovereignty after centuries of foreign interference. Economically, Iran faces structural challenges beyond sanctions. Despite impressive educational achievements, the economy fails to generate sufficient opportunities for graduates. Resource dependence, corruption, and inefficient state enterprises constrain growth, while environmental challenges, including water scarcity, threaten long-term sustainability. Politically, the system has shown both rigidity and adaptability. The basic structure of clerical oversight remains unchanged, but significant evolution has occurred within these parameters. Elections continue to matter, despite their limitations, with different factions competing vigorously for power and policy direction. The death of Supreme Leader Khamenei, now in his 80s, will present a critical transition. Unlike the hasty process that elevated Khamenei after Khomeini's death, the next succession will likely involve more deliberate institutional procedures. Whether the assembly of experts selects a senior cleric, a political figure, or even considers a leadership council remains uncertain. What seems clear is that Iran's revolutionary experiment will continue evolving rather than suddenly collapsing or dramatically liberalizing. The system has developed resilient institutions and powerful stakeholders with vested interests in its continuation, while also demonstrating capacity to adapt to changing circumstances. As Axworthy concludes, understanding Iran requires recognizing its complexity beyond simplistic narratives of either imminent democratic transformation or irredeemable religious fanaticism. The Revolutionary Republic remains a work in progress, shaped by its revolutionary origins, but increasingly defined by the practical challenges of governance in a changing world.